William Henry is an investigative mythologist, author of many numerous books on ancient mythology and neo-archaeology with a Stargate twist. By applying the latest theories in science consciousness to ancient myths of the gates of the illumined gods, including Sumerian, Egyptian, and the Holy Grail gateway myths, he hopes to uncover the secrets of the guarded by such groups as the Illuminati. His latest book, Oracle of the Illuminati, states that we are on the verge of rediscovering the sacred science of creating peace on Earth. I sure hope so, William. We're overdue for it, aren't we?
Yes, sir, George.
How are you?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm doing great.
Thanks for having me back on the program.
Likewise. Hey, are you getting ready now for the harmonic concordance?
I am. I've started getting ready back in the summer. I had a chance to meet John Murray-Hell and his wife, Jan, a very delightful couple. Met them up in Michigan at an event sponsored by Mary Hardy, a group that are hardcore into helping to bring this event into fruition. So I started hearing about it then, and now here we are all of a sudden.
What is the difference between what occurred in 87 when the planets aligned with the harmonic convergence and now what is called the harmonic concordance, which has to do something with the lunar eclipse? What's really the major difference here?
Well, they're actually very similar. One of the primary differences is that the 1987 date was one that Jose Arguelles, the Mayan researcher, had actually pulled out of the Mayan calendar as one of the initial dates of the countdown towards the Mayan 2012 prophecies. So the difference is that the harmonic concordance is primarily an astrological prediction. It's a horoscope for Earth on the weekend of November 8th through the 11th, whereas the 1987 convergence date was more of a prophetic type of an event.
How many people do you think in 87 really jumped on board with what was going on at that time?
Well, I think a lot of people, a lot more than we realize, jumped on board, because I recall the convergence very well. And I was in Detroit at that time, and I remember celebrating it with friends. It was a time I had been studying the myths and metaphysics for about 6 or so years then, so I was very interested in that kind of event. And friends had heard about it and just wanted to kind of get their feet wet in terms of participating in a spiritual celebration of that nature, because it was really the very first kind of an event of that nature since the happenings of the 60s that people had had an opportunity to get together, join hands, join prayers, join meditation, and try and manifest something. And I had a kind of a lower note with it. I do remember watching the news broadcast that day, and the people that seemed to have equally as good a time with it were the news broadcasters that said, "Oh, come on, we can't change our world, you know, we're done, whatever." So it was kind of that's just one of the memories that I have of the convergence.
Well, let me tell you, as we talk about the concordance for a while tonight and all the many things that you've been working on since we last chatted, you know I'm a strong believer in the collective consciousness, and we've done a number of things now on this program where I am now so convinced that it works, it's beginning to become baffling why it isn't to me. Another case in point, William, just a few days ago, during the wildfires here in Southern California, we haven't had rain out here in a long, long time, many months. So all of a sudden, people put their collective minds together. I was getting a number of emails, hundreds of fast blasts saying, "Let's do it together. Come on." And I held back and I said, "All right, let's do it." And sure enough, within a day, we started getting raindrops, trickles. People were emailing me saying, "I can't believe it. You people just talked about it an hour ago and we've got raindrops now." And by Halloween Friday, we had some heavy rain. And, I'm not going to let the Coast listeners take full credit for the fact that the rain has put out those fires, because the thousands of firefighters are the ones that got that job done. But it is, to me, it continues to be very, very strange how when we do things like this, all of a sudden, with no rain for a long, long time, it begins to roll into the forecast. All of a sudden it rains, stays wet for a couple days, and the fires die down, And now things are going to start to get back to normal again, with the hopes, of course, of the poor people who have lost their homes and the 22 deaths that we had. But it just boggles my mind that it seems to work.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the power of mass collective focusing is proven over and over again. And as you suggest, it can bring enormous potential to a moment. But in that case, too, it brought a tremendous sense of peace, too, because it suggested that we were getting a break in the fires. It created that environment. It was, in fact, they described it that when that rain and that mist came in, that was the perfect environment for the firemen to fight the fire.
Well, how is it that the mind, collectively or otherwise, can do something and affect something physical?
Well, it all goes back to this notion that there is a single collective consciousness of which we're all participants in. We're all, by our neural networks, hardwired into this net, so to speak. And what we're doing consciously and through our subconscious thoughts as well is something akin to what we do every day on the Internet. When we fire up our computers and dial up our server and we connect with the net, we're connecting with millions and perhaps even billions of other computers at the same time. And this is an analog, if you will. It's a copy of a natural process that each of us are able to participate in through our own thought.
Now, in this particular case, the harmonic concordance, if people want to participate in it, what are they supposed to do, if anything?
Well, there's nothing that you're really supposed to do. It's thought to be a moment apart, a time when you can begin to focus your intention primarily on your hopes and dreams for the future, both personally as well as for the entire civilization as a whole. I've received calls from a lot of people that are going to sacred sites, oracle centers to pray, to meditate, to anchor this energy is a term that's being used repeatedly. People are sensing that they have an opportunity here as these energies accumulate to bring them down from an ethereal realm into our physical realm. And there's just no telling what kind of potential exists within that moment. Each and every person's going to experience it in their own way, but collectively we can all bring this water, this living water, so to speak, down from the collective well and bring it in and begin to cleanse and purify our thought patterns.
Now, one of the things they're saying in an astrological way is that the lunar eclipse may take on a Star of David configuration. Now, I know what the Star of David is, but how can it take on that kind of configuration?
Well, the lunar eclipse itself won't take on the configuration. The Star of David comes from, or rather is defined by, the positions in our sky of six planets: the Sun, the Moon, Mars, Jupiter, Saturn, mm-hmm. and the planetoid Chiron. And so together it's these six bodies that form what they call a grand sextile, which is an astrological term for a pattern, a six-pointed star.
And that is one of the important parts of this concordance?
Right. And when John Murayhill went and was looking into the future through his astrological programs, he stumbled upon this date about 3-4 years ago of November 8th to the 11th, 2003, and saw this stunning image appear on his computer screen. And it was in the image of the six-pointed star. If you've ever seen a horoscope, you note that it looks essentially like a wheel, and it has the constellations rimming the wheel, and then within that are patterns based upon the particular astrological influences of that moment. Well, the pattern that emerged as he peered into his computer that day was very symmetrical, in fact, perfectly symmetrical, and formed the six-pointed star, the Star of David.
Interesting. Interesting indeed. So what will you do on Saturday yourself? Anything special?
Oh, I'll probably go down to the Tennessee Bicentennial Capitol Mall down here, which is a beautiful prayer and meditation center, and spend an afternoon there doing what I suggest other people will be doing, which is focusing their intention, bringing this energy in any way possible. I always think that we have to back it up with some kind of an action in addition to that, and I'm not sure what I'm going to do yet, but I'll find some way to bring it into a physical reality that way.
William, will we feel differently? I mean, are we going to feel kind of energetic?
Oh, it's absolutely possible that you're going to feel better. You're going to feel a little different because, especially if that's the intention going into it, that depending upon your own personal astrological profile, it could bring dramatic results because this is a rare moment. It's kind of, astrologically speaking, it's sort of like going to Vegas and seeing nothing but sevens on the slot machine. For whatever reason, we pulled the lever and it's cherry, cherry, cherry on this particular weekend.
But in my case, the sevens never come up.
Well, this might be the time here.
Well, when will the, I guess we don't know when a next event, harmonic event, will occur, do we?
No, we don't, but I can rest assured that there are astrologers that are out there that are looking for this. I was wondering if any had looked into the past because, of course, the Star of David, you're automatically making associations with the Star of the Magi and things of this nature. And, of course, the Star of David itself is a blueprint for wholeness. So it's a dramatic sign that we're moving forward here. I had an astrologer describe it to me. It's as if collectively we're all walking through a hallway. And as a civilization, we go through one door, and then we go through another door, and then we go through another door, and we just keep going through these doors as if we're tunneling through time. And every now and then, very rarely, comes an event as dramatic as this that lets us know the destination, that we're actually going through the door. And it in fact, John Murray Hill has described this as an energetic stargate. Now, this doesn't mean we're going to be suddenly transported somewhere, but it does speak to this notion that it's a very clearly defined moment when we know that a door is opening and we're going to be able to step through it.
I'll tell you, William Henry's website is linked up now with coasttocoastam.com. You'll find it right underneath his name under tonight's guest. It's williamhenry.net. And also, William, Dana Augustine has some tremendous artwork that she's created for you about the celebration of the concordance. And it's just a great picture that we've captured from you and put on the website here.
Thank you. Yeah, Dana's a terrific artist, wonderful guy. I've really enjoyed working with him these past several years. He has an uncanny ability to, it just time after time, I'll be thinking this is the kind of image that I would like to have for the book cover or for this masthead, for example. And next thing I know, Dana's already emailed it to me.
Yeah, yeah. And he's got the Star of David depicted there.
Yeah.
In its fashion. Also, if anybody wants any more information on the harmonic concordance, there is a website link also shortly right underneath the picture that you'll see on the website, astrosite.com. Go take a look at that as well. Wanted to take just a few moments, William, to get your reaction to these bursts of solar flares that we've been getting lately. We've been darn lucky that we haven't had any significant damage here on the planet. Had this X-40, which is what they think it might be now, have that had a direct hit on the planet, there's no telling what would have happened.
Yeah, it is just absolutely amazing. I started following the solar flare story back in 96. I had an opportunity when I was in Denver to go over to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and talk with them, and they've been concerned about this increased solar activity since that time, and because we're so exposed with our satellites, with our communications, with our entire culture now is based upon our ability to connect in this way, and if you suddenly take that out, where are we? But even more importantly, there's kind of an interesting spiritual twist to this as well, because prophetically speaking, billions of people are anticipating a second coming of a Christ or Messiah. And the interesting thing about that is that when Jesus was nailed upon the cross, Pontius Pilate had placed a placard that had the inscription INRI placed upon it, I-N-R-I. In traditional Christian terms, this is interpreted as Jesus the Nazarene, King of the Jews. And it was placed there both to state his crime, how dare he proclaim himself the King of the Jews,
mm-hmm.
also to mock him. But in the esoteric tradition, INRI is interpreted differently. It's interpreted to mean by fire, frequency or vibration, humanity is renewed whole. And so that's what I went to the folks at NOAA to talk with them about, is there a possibility that the billions of tons of charged particles in those mass coronal ejections, is there any possibility that those can have an impact on humanity in a spiritual sense? And in fact, when we think of those mass charged particles as the fire's frequencies or vibrations that are coming in and bathing the planet, and we begin to look at them from that perspective, something really interesting happens. I mean, what we find is that NASA, going back to 1971, has been studying these charged particles and the manner in which they impact humanity, because when the Apollo astronauts first went into space, they were constantly being bombarded by these charged particles. And as these particles pinged off the retina of the astronauts' eyes, they began to see what they described as phosphenes. Now, these are symbols such as curlicues, grids, tunnels, things such as this, and they were very distracting. And in fact, NASA had to redesign the space helmets in order to deflect those cosmic rays so that the astronauts could go about their work.
Now, were they seeing things that were actually in space, or was this being created in their minds based on the reaction?
Here is the amazing thing about these phosphenes and the connection with the charged particles. At the same time that NASA is doing their investigations into this phenomena in 1971, Tim Leary and his gang up at Harvard mm-hmm. are experimenting with LSD, and they are seeing the exact same symbols. Now, there were some anthropologists from Australia that looked at this phenomena, and they noticed that the very same symbols that the Apollo astronauts were seeing, that Tim Leary's gang was seeing, were the same symbols that were etched on archaic rocks going back as many as 20,000 years in Australia. And what they determined was that this symbol system, these phosphenes, must be literally hardwired into our DNA. They're activated by solar flare activity through the charged particles that ping off the retina of our eye and release these symbols that are latent within us.
You know, last night my guest Hank Wesselman confirmed some of the things that you were saying with these pings that were occurring on the eyes of astronauts. It was really remarkable. William, we'll be right back with you as we continue our chat. I'm going to talk with you about the Stargates. Don't go away. You're listening to Coast AM.
Subscribe to the After Dark newsletter online at www.coasttocoastam.com. Just click through the orange type to the secure server.